From unknown parts of metropolitan New York City, I am the hippie. This is the Leah.
Yes, yes. Hello. Hello, everybody in H&L Nation, or good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, whenever you might be listening. A little change up to the traditional opening. Oh, my God, we have so much to do. And before we dive all into it, just an apology to our listeners who are probably wondering what the hell happened at the very end of the episode. It seemed like there wasn't a seamless ending there. Well, you are correct. You're very astute with your observation. Technical difficulties. I'm sure you listened to episode 78A as the hip provided the explanation as to what happened. All technical. So don't worry. All the stuff that you missed out on, we will rehash and make sure that we give you every last drop of it. In this week's episode, oh my God, so much to do, so much to get to. The government is back open. The Super Bowl might be closed. The NFL might be closed for business due to this NFL officiating Armageddon that's upon us. Oh my God. But before we get into all of that, plus Islanders, plus Knicks, plus Anthony Davis, oh, he wants to leave. Oh, plus Super Bowl Tom Brady, then nobody believed in us, all that nonsense. But the hip and I last night got a breaking news bulletin. Well, it was a text showing the breaking news bulletin, and I believe ESPN, because who else would it be other than ESPN, apparently wanted to notify all of its subscribers that Odell Beckham, yes, Odell Beckham, was sitting courtside at the Lakers game. Oh, my God. But also, not just that, he was also wearing, or rocking, I should say, that was their word, a stylish shirt. Not just any shirt, a stylish shirt. So next time we get a breaking news bulletin that informs the audience of a superstar athlete is in the crowd or courtside at a basketball game without any mention of his attire, we can naturally assume he must have been wearing some kind of thrift store cardigan, only like a true H would.
And to double down on this, someone told me coincidentally today that the New York Post back page cover was about Carmelo Anthony sitting courtside at the Knicks game last night with Dwayne Wade in attendance. And they did mention that Carmelo Anthony was wearing a hat with the number 7. So you probably didn't even realize that happened, and yet...
breaking news. Which one is more W gas?
High on the breaking news.
Which one, I wonder, is more W gas? Well,
Carmelo Anthony's future? Oh, boy. Bring him back.
Well, Dolan didn't kick him out. Dolan didn't have him escorted out. He didn't pull a Charles Oakley and say, all right, you, get out. Let's get him out.
It was a video montage late in the first quarter, apparently. So he was shown on the scoreboard. So must have been some plans ahead of time to coordinate something to that degree. Oh boy, Carmelo Anthony.
Fans are very teary-eyed at seeing the tribute to Carmelo Anthony, the superstar of yesteryear who brought so much pride and so much joy and excitement and just so much wondrous moments in the Carmelo Anthony era.
James Harden has become the player that Knicks fans wish Carmelo Anthony came to be in the sense of being a ball hog.
Highest scoring player that ever wins.
Well, James Harden, so I'm kind of transitioning away, but James Harden's streak of consecutive unassisted baskets finally came to an end. Guess how many consecutive baskets James Harden scored, field goals, without a team member recording an assist.
I was unaware of this at all. I mean, I knew about his 40-point streak and however many games in a row with 40 points and all that nonsense. So he had a streak of consecutive baskets scored without an assist from a teammate. And
correct. And it broke last night in the first quarter.
Was it like an NBA record? Did they say? I can only imagine how long they've been keeping this those records, those stats. How many unassisted baskets in a row? All right. Let me guess.
Just take a guess.
It's got to be a pretty absurdly H number. So I'll say, but I don't want to go too crazy. I'll just guess 27.
Plus 60?
No way. How is that even? Okay.
302 consecutive points.
302 points, not baskets.
Right, 302 okay. consecutive points on 87 baskets.
They must have plotted this out from the beginning, or at some point they said, you know what, we need to get James the record for most consecutive baskets. Without, how is that? Wow.
What could you be more proud of as an NBA player? The most consecutive baskets without a teammate contributing.
I don't even think Stacey Patton from Eddie could have pulled that one off. I don't. Or even Michael J. Fox in Teen Wolf when he was in his selfish game and stealing the ball from his teammates. You know, the fat guy and the other guy, like literally stealing the ball from his teammates as they went triple the court. 87 baskets in a row, unassisted. That congratulations, James. And to go along with his zero championships and zero NBA Finals appearances, but hey, the guy is a hell of a scorer. Anyway,
that's a good way to close the loop on the NBA talk. I think we're done with NBA talk for tonight.
He's not happy. He wants out.
We'll save that for another day.
All the Knicks. Thank you.
Kristaps,
are they going to? What are they going to do? They have to get Davis. They have to get him. Come on, Knicks. Come on.
All right.
You guys next. Well, yeah, actually, I was going to end.
Okay, end your introductory nonsensical comments. Let's go.
Because obviously we're going to transition now to .NFL. Of course, everything what everybody wants to hear, but. And we will get, obviously, into the big, huge, controversial non-call from the NFL championship game. But I didn't have a joke for it. I was thinking of some kind of joke. You know what? I think everybody's heard every last joke that you can possibly get from it. So because it's been over a week now. But I wanted to ask you to put your legal fedora on and just comment on the two separate lawsuits that have been filed by Saints fans. First one regarding Rule 17, which says that Raja can overturn a result of a game if it's so blatantly. I don't even know what the wording is. Who cares? But there was a lawsuit filed by two Saints fans, which apparently has already been assigned to a judge and blah, blah, blah. And then another one for Saints ticket holders that filed a class action suit against the NFL because I guess they were just traumatized by that maybe it was a negligent infliction of emotional distress over their Saints losing the game. So two lawsuits as a result of the finale of the Saints Rams championship game.
Exactly. I mean, there's a concept in the legal world called standing. A party must have standing in order to bring an action. And what is standing? It basically means there has to be a sufficient connection between the party that's bringing the suit and the defendant that they had sufficient harm as a result of the action to proceed with the lawsuit. And that's basically lacking. I mean, what damages can you claim? And you're going to claim intentional infliction of emotional distress. Intentional, right. Okay.
it was just that blatant gross negligence on the part of the NFL officials. Maybe one of the Saints fans got so drunk as a result of the wash down his sorrows, and he like tripped and fell down the stairs, and is suing for damages that I can't even make up anything that laugh at. Anyway, moving on. Unless you have anything more.
The thing about the call is it basically overshadows everything else that happened in this football game.
Yeah, it's about the game.
However much you want to talk about the game that went into overtime, I don't know how many times that's happened recently, although there was another one that same day for a conference championship. But I mean, for conference championship game purposes, that is. It basically overshadowed everything else that happened. One thing that stuck out to me about this football game, Todd Gurley, just a shell of himself again, basically a no-show, claims he's healthy, but I can't believe him until he actually looks like the player he was the first half of the season. So, I mean, I don't know if they're downplaying it or what the deal is, but I mean, he made a couple of bad plays early on, but that I don't care how bad Todd Gurley's plays are. You keep him on the field, and they didn't do that. CJ Anderson got, obviously a boatload of touches. Whereas earlier in the season, Todd Gurley's direct backup, Malcolm Brown, barely sniffed the field ever. So clearly, Todd Gurley is not himself. And that's a huge deal, a week from today, basically. A week from yesterday. for the Super Bowl. Well, it's a huge, 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 huge deal.
Might be a bigger deal a week from today if he doesn't do anything in the Super Bowl.
Yes.
Yes, all right. So that's it? So Todd Gurley and W. Gass the rest of the game?
I mean, no. the Saints' passing offense has not been the same, as you pointed out, since Cooper Kupp has been out. Robert Woods hasn't been the same player either.
The Rams you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, the Rams. No, we could go into all the Saints stuff too, but the Rams found a way to pull it off. A bit of luck on their side, some good kicking, and that fake punt was a pretty cool play. Ballsy, but it worked, and
kind of game
momentum shift indeed. Of course, things had to happen for them to still win, but nevertheless, a huge play for them. And yeah, I mean, the Saints. They just haven't been the same team, I feel like, the second half. And, you know, they showed some subpar performances at home already. We talked about it last week, or about a week and a half ago now for us.
Yeah. With
the Cowboys, against the Cowboys at home. They just are an inconsistent offense, and they couldn't, Alvin Kamara's slowed down, Michael Thomas. They just, not the same firepower team. And is it mostly on the shoulder of Drew Brees, I guess, is the question.
Brees was awful. He could not have, for a Hall of Fame quarterback, future Hall of Fame quarterback, who was talked about as the MVP of the season, only a month and a half ago as a potential MVP candidate. And we talked about last week or about the week before how he had not played well at the end of the season, how he didn't play that great the week before in the divisional game. And last week, in the championship game, he was even worse. He did nothing. He was awful. He hit on one play again, I think in the fourth quarter, that should have been picked off. That was the only ball over 15 yards that he had all game. Everything was dink and dunk to Kamara early on. I mean, Kamara had 122 catches for 124 yards. I mean, I think it was 11 for 90 something. But I mean, everything was to Kamara early on. They had the lead. They had a 13-0 lead. Here comes the fake punt. Huge momentum shift in the game. The Rams are able to stabilize it. They're able to, they didn't allow the Saints to run away with the game. Their defense played a lot better. And, I mean, ultimately what you got was a Saint offense that just could not make any kind of explosive play down the field again, other than they played again. Thomas was quiet. And, the Rams made enough plays and Goff made enough play. I got to say, Goff really impressed me. I mean, I was hard on him. I said that I talked about how he had not played very well coming into the game, the last part of the season. And again, in the divisional game, you have to do anything. It was just the C.J. Anderson and Todd Gurley show. And, the Ram offensive line played terrific. And Goff made all the throws. He made a few tough throws. So I got to say, I was very impressed with Goff. And he severely outplayed Brees, made the plays down the stretch. Like you said, kicking some, timely field goals from Zerline. The turnover in overtime after, obviously, we know about the blown call. And look, Peyton, screwed himself by not running the ball on first down, throwing the ball on first down there. I mean, gave the Rams a huge gift, the incomplete pass. I don't know what the hell he was doing there. But obviously, look, we know, the whole world knows, third down, here comes what's-his-face, whatever, down the sideline. He's leveled and clear, obvious, no doubt about it, pass interference. Again, we don't have to rehash it because we've all heard about it. Multiple lawsuits that was a result of it. But, if that is called, then the Saints probably win. They wind down the clock, kick a game-winning field goal, assuming the kick is good. But just if you will assume that it would be good, from 30 or whatever yards, the Saints are now in a Super Bowl against the Patriots instead of the Rams. But not to be, here come the Rams, and I think get a more compelling matchup because I think the Rams are a better team and a more interesting team right now than the Saints. So, yeah, and there you go. And the coach quarterback combo for the Rams was better than the young Goff and the younger McVay. I know he's older than Goff, but the 30-year-old McVay and the young Goff were better than the Super Bowl champion Peyton Breeze combination in this game, and that's really what it came down to.
Yeah. I read a story. I don't want to go on too long about this, but Adam Schefter wrote a story talking about how the NFL has to change its officiating procedures because four of the members of the officiating crew had ties to California. So it's not a good look.
Yeah, but that was a ridiculous story, though. I mean, come on, man. You're gonna put. I mean, I don't want to pile on because he's already been, you know, eviscerated, by his colleagues in the media for putting out that story, suggesting, implying that there might have been something going on there as to the fact that the Rams have been in California for 10 minutes. So we're going to say that these are lifelong Rams fans that waited all game until the end of the game to change the outcome with a ridiculous non-call. I mean, I know he wasn't obviously saying that, but even just like the stupid headline, come on. Do they have to redo their system? You know what? I don't even have an opinion on it. I don't care. I don't know what the right answer is here. We know that it's going to be talked about all offseason. We know, especially if the Super Bowl, you got a bad call. I mean, you know, all hell will break loose. But, I mean, this was just a bad look for the NFL. They hide. They don't acknowledge anything. You know, they pretend like it didn't even happen. Oh, there was a bad call? Really? Oh, we'll have to look into it. We'll get back to you. I mean, this is the way they operate. They sweep everything under the rug. They hope it goes away. And, they never get out in front of anything. They're just completely clueless when it comes to anything public relations related. And what a shock. Here they are again with their pants down after, a game changing and Super Bowl significant altering non-call in a championship game. So, man,
they're changing the rules. And I don't know, man, like the games are long enough and I get the desire to change it to prevent outcomes like this, but it's a subjective, totally subjective call. I mean, are you going to start reviewing personal fouls in basketball every time a foul is called? I mean,
basketball. I mean, they review every flagrant now, and
review flagrants, but they don't review personal. They can't review personal fouls, but it's
I can't stand that either, especially in the college game. It takes 2 hours to play 2 minutes in the college.
And it's gonna and the same thing would happen here, but who knows? Maybe they'll budge a little and allow like one challenge of a pass interference call per game. I don't know. Let's move on. So the to me obviously, and I think to most, the more exciting game was the later game and slow start, 14-0 Patriots at half, but the Chiefs came roaring back with 31 second half points, 24 in the fourth quarter, enough to force overtime. And, you know, Brady and does his business to finish it out with a touchdown scoring drive in overtime. One interesting stat that I read, and I don't know if you saw this. Do you know how many offensive plays the Patriots ran in that football game?
How many offensive plays? I mean, on average you like run 70 to 80. So I don't know. Are you saying that they ran a lot or because they were dominating time of possession in the first half? Yeah. So I would say that they probably ran a lot. So I'll say 90 something. 92.
Close. 94. All right. Time of possession 43 minutes. Chiefs ran 47 plays. Time of possession 20 minutes.
Niche. I didn't even realize it was that big of a disparity. It's almost like the. Yeah. The Patriot Falcons Super Bowl from a couple of years ago.
Brutal. Where, like, they couldn't have. The Patriots executed their game plan, and look, they got some help from D. Ford, the big play. And as that happened, you know what I said? Because on that play, it was an interception, right?
But that was game over,
right? But who was involved in that interception besides Tom Brady on the Patriots? Who was the intended target?
Well, Edelman had to go off his hands earlier in the second half. Gronk.
It was Gronk, and the ball went off his hands on that play. And after that happened, I said, if this flag is on the Patriots, that might have been Rob Gronkowski's last play of his career because of all the talk that he might be retiring. Sure enough, it's offense. It's offsides. The Patriots get the ball back, and on the very next play, where does the ball go to?
Right to Gronk.
Gronkowski sets up the Patriots first and goal, and they score the touchdown on the drive. And, you know, it's long. I shouldn't say it's long forgotten because D. Ford has certainly not been. Not, I mean, he was named to the Pro Bowl. He was a good player. But, you know, that one's gonna bite. It wasn't like he even jumped. He was just lined up.
Yeah, it was his last. He was way up. offside. I mean, you heard Andy Reid after the game go, oh, they usually warn him about that. Well, when you're that far offside, I mean, there's no, well, we'll let him get away with it this time, and then next time we'll say, don't do it again. I mean, he was way in the neutral zone. You had to throw the flag there. You know what? Hey, you make a stupid mistake like that, you get what's coming to you. And, I mean, the Chiefs, I mean, they were ready to, I mean, they were scoring on every possession in the second half. I mean, they, you know, like you said, the Patriots executed their game plan similar to the way they did it in the divisional round against the San Diego Chargers. That's right. I said San Diego. Oh, come after me, NFL.
Nobody would have even noticed.
But you don't think that's going to get right back to Raja? Who said San Diego? Well, where is he?
Yeah, I mean, we can even their own head coach, when he first was hired, Anthony Lynn, he came out like at one of his first press conferences and said, you know, I'm so glad to, you know, be here in San Diego or something like that.
I think I remember that, actually. But yeah, the Patriot offensive line dominated again early, running the ball down the throats of the Chiefs. They couldn't get their pass. I mean, that's what we talked about, right? We said, can the Chiefs stop, you know, the Patriot most likely game plan of trying to establish a running game like they did against the Chargers and get their pass rush teed off? And they never did. I mean, they didn't touch Brady all game. That's why Ford had to line up in the backfield. Otherwise, he wasn't going to touch him. So, I mean, that was really the story of the game early on. And hey, you can talk about how the Chiefs are going up and down the field against the Patriots later in the game, which they did. But that was a huge, huge reason why the Patriots had a chance to win at the end. And, you know, we can get into, you know, some of the other things, obviously shutting down Hill, which the Patriots did. Hill had one catch the whole game. He had a long catch in the first quarter or second quarter. It was in the first half, I think, pretty sure. And that was it. Nothing else the rest of the game. What's his face? Kelce had a terrible game. I mean, he had a couple drops. I mean, he had a very non-impactful game for him. Apparently they had Gilmore on him. They moved him over after having Gilmore on Watkins early in the game. They moved him over to Kelce and completely shut him down really for the most of the second half. He was utilizing Williams out of the backfield a lot, Mahomes, and he was, you know, hitting some of his other receivers, Watkins, the other Connell, whatever his name is. But, you can argue, obviously, that if they won the one, the coin toss, Kansas City, that they would have marched down the field and won the game, which I was more up in arms about the over. I hate the overtime rule in the playoffs. I think it's fine for the regular season. It is time to change the rule in the playoffs. If you want to make it that both teams get the ball and, if a team scores a touchdown and the other team has to come down, score a touchdown, if they do, now it's next points wins. That's fine. Or if you want to just make it a full quarter, just 15 minutes play, and then hopefully this ended a tie. I don't know. But I hate that a team can get the ball in overtime against another team that's, obviously tired at after four quarters of football and just march down the field. They put it in the end zone, win the game, and then the other offense didn't get a chance to touch the ball. I can't stand it. They have to change it. I was more angry about that in the pass interference. Oh, I want to see in some replay pass interference. I would rather them change the overtime rule first. I hate it. A coin toss, again, benefits the Patriots like it did against the Falcons a couple of years ago. So I'm sick of Brady. I'm sick of the Patriots. I've had enough. And we get them again. Again.
Yeah, so now you got to transition into the preview.
Yeah. Any more comments or thoughts on the championship game? Indeed.
I mean, I don't feel as strongly about changing the rule. I mean, look, it worked out. The Saints got the ball at home in overtime, and they couldn't score. So, I mean, look, it's kind of like that.
So that's why
you can score a touchdown on the first drive. I don't know what the percentage is, but it's probably not. You're not scoring a touchdown on half your drives. It's not even probably above 50%.
No, they could stop them. You're right. I mean, they could have stopped them, but you do have two sides of the ball. It's not like in hockey, you're dropping a puck and then they're both going at it. It's not like basketball where you have a tip off and then you're going back and forth and over time. You know, it's not like baseball. You have less. I mean, it's different. It's a different type of game. I don't like the college rule either. I'm not advocating the college rule. I hate the college rule too. But I think that at least both teams should get the ball. If the Patriots come down and score a touchdown and then put it in for 2 points, it was converted on a 2-point conversion, or whatever, then that's what the other team has to do. And if they don't, they lose.
Extending the overtime game by a drive if the team with the opening possession scores a touchdown, basically.
Yes, and obviously, yes, like you said, you don't have to let them score a touchdown. You're allowed to stop them. The rule book says you can play defense, we know. But at least then the other team is getting the ball with a chance to at least have a chance to win. And if I just
Hey, so then what do you do if the Patriots score?
Change it.
So what happens if the Patriots score, Chiefs get the ball, they score a touchdown, then what?
Wins. And I'd be okay with that.
You know, then you're kicking. So you're just basically enabling both teams to get the ball at least once.
Exactly. Exactly. Or play a full quarter. Play 15 minutes and see what happens. And then play another one if it's still tied. I mean, at least from a championship game standpoint, you can look at it and say, well, you're going to have 2 weeks off. If it's, you know, one of the previous rounds, then it's a little dicey because obviously you're playing the next week, whoever wins. Championship round, I mean, it's difficult to do that. I know, well, everything is so hard to change rules and do this in the NFL. I get it. And whatever. I don't like the rule. Whatever. We get the Patriots again. Nobody cares about the Patriots anymore in the Super Bowl. The ticket prices are probably going to go down to I think the Islander ticket prices for NYCB Live might exceed the Super Bowl ticket prices by the time we get to the game, because nobody's going to care about this Ram Patriots Super Bowl. Another
get excited. Maybe not in person, but I'm sure you know the ratings on TV will be high. People are going to be watching.
They are. Sure. Yeah.
You know. The Sean McVay storyline, I think, is fun and cool. Look, you got a 33-year-old head coach, the youngest to ever be a head coach in the Super Bowl. Bill Belichick is more than 33 years older than Sean McVay. He's 8 years younger than Brady. I mean, he's younger than you and I are. It's nuts.
Hey, Belichick's been coaching longer than McVay's been alive. I mean, that's how far back Belichick goes.
McVay and Edelman played against each other in college. I think it was two games. They were both in the Mid-American Conference. Just a couple of things about McVay. You know, he's obviously got an amazing memory. You've seen a couple of clips of him, like, recalling exactly the outcome of a play that happened, on a game that he was head coach for several years ago. It's easy to lean towards the Rams and root for the Rams against this, you know, Goliath dynasty. I mean, head coach quarterback dynasty that just they won't seem to go away because they don't number want to.
It's number nine now for Bill and Tom. We get him one more year at least, and as long as the NFC East stinks, which it probably will again next year, because look at the teams. They will be right back atop the division next year, and we'll be dealing with this maybe again next year and maybe the year after. And
let's get right to the chase and let's ask you, what, instead of doing this slow, drawn out like preview, what is your number one hot take on the Super Bowl?
Oh, yes, I did label it a hot take. Well, the hot take will be a couple things. Gurley, you talked about Gurley. Gurley last week didn't have to do anything for them to win, obviously, partly because the Saints sucked. So Gurley not being any kind of factor, or like I keep saying last week, whatever, championship weekend, his irrelevance didn't make a difference. If he's irrelevant again, the Rams will lose. That I don't think there's any question that he has to be their best, at least offensive player, in this game. I'm not looking at Goff. I'm not looking at wide receivers. I'm not looking at Everett's or tight ends or whoever. I'm looking at or C.J. Anderson. I know that the Mike Tolbert imposter is out doing his best Jerome Bettis impression. Fine. It has to be Todd Gurley in this game, because if it's not, they will lose. I think they are going to get him the ball anyway if he's healthy. Again, he claims he's healthy. I'm practicing. Look at me. I'm good. I'm fine. You know, I'm not even on the injury report. Okay. Well, then they have to get him the ball early and often, and then more and more and more. And if they do, and he is effective, and he's running the ball, and he has space, and he's catching the ball in space, and he's and the offensive line is getting the better of the Patriot defense, I'm not saying they will absolutely win, but they will have a chance to win. If he doesn't, they lose. Now,
shame on McVay if he gets too cute and tries to not involve Gurley early on. I mean, this is the Super Bowl. This is it. Like, you're going to find out pretty quickly if Gurley is effective or not. And don't hesitate. Just let's find out right away. You know, it's not, there's no reason to hold back or try to dance around it. Like, just he was such a dominant player in the first three quarters of the season. Go right back to it, assuming that he's capable.
And that's maybe where the head coach's lack of experience will come in. If he tries to get too cute and show what a genius he is, an offensive genius dynamo, and look at me, I'm going to overtake Bill Belichick as the next Bill Belichick in the NFL. I mean, look, Doug Peterson coached circles around Belichick last year. He was 1 and 2 and 3 and steps ahead of him every single turn last year in the Super Bowl. Maybe McVay can get it over on Belichick again, and then we can talk about how Belichick's too old and the game's passing him by. But like you said, he cannot just get, you know, say, well, I'm going to, you know, try this. I have this trick play. I'm going to try this type of offense. No, get Gurley the ball. If he's not healthy, well, then, you know, I guess you have hope C.J. Anderson just bulldozes the Patriots defensive line. But that is, and you can say it's obvious, fine, but look at the way the Chiefs utilized Damian Williams last week. Damian Williams was absolutely eating up the Patriots in the second half. They were getting him, he was running the ball. They were getting the ball out of the backfield. I mean, Damian Williams. He's not Todd Gurley. So just look at the way they use Williams and get him the ball early and often. Next, look, stare at the fat guys on in the middle of the line when the Rams are on defense and the Patriots are on offense. Just stare at those fat guys in the middle of the line. Don't watch a quarterback. Don't watch anything else. Just stare there. Why? Because remember that the Giants and the Falcons, when they gave the Patriots and Tom Brady fits, it was because they were getting pressure up the middle. There's a guy on the defensive line for the Rams. We talked about him last week. I keep saying land. Whatever the hell we talked about him. Aaron Donald. I'm mentioning him again because he is the best defensive player on the planet. He is an absolute impossible man to deal with in the interior of that defensive line. He gets in the backfield. He eats up everything that comes at him. He is an absolute just beast in the line in the middle of that defensive line. And if he is going to abuse the Patriot interior, which was one of the best interior offensive lines in the league this year, if he's able to do that, it will be it could potentially be a long day for Tom and company in the, on the New England offense. That is the matchup to what to look for. Stare at those fat guys in the middle of the line. Now, the Patriot offensive line has been absolutely fantastic, really the whole year, but especially in the playoffs, they have just run over their opponents in the running game. Again, he hasn't been sacked in either of the two playoff games. I think he's been sacked more than once in the last like 7 or 8 weeks or something like that, Brady. They have been absolutely phenomenal. But if they can get pressure up the middle with Donald and they can get Fowler off the end and maybe Sue makes a little bit of a contribution and they are able to do what the Giants did in 2007 and 11, but really in 2007 with Tuck in the middle of the line and what the Falcons were able to do a few years ago, it will be a long game or maybe a game where they have to come back from another 28-3 deficit again, the Patriots. Those are two of my hot takes. I got a few other things too, but Mr. Hip, what do you think about that?
No, I don't think I could dispute it. I mean, the Rams, I feel like Ezekiel Elliott ran on them a bit in the divisional round. Last week, the Saints couldn't really get the run game going that much. Kamara was not terribly effective, nor was Ingram. So I think their run defense has held up. I don't know what the numbers are off the top of my head, but we have
98 yards on 43 carries. In the two games, the rush defense for the Rams.
somebody had it at their fingertips. Oh.
Yes, 2.3 yards a carry.
Or did I know that you knew and I gave you that leading opportunity to show off your bottomless pit of sports knowledge?
I
did not know that he knew that. But sometimes I do ask leading questions. In that instance, I did not. So there you go.
I was actually tallying it in my head watching the two games. I was like, all right, that's one carry for 3 yards. That's two carries for 4 yards. Okay, we're up to now 12 carries for 38.
Goff is a bit of a wild card, though. He does make some bad throws. He does look shaky at times. He had a good start to the year. Maybe that's because the running game was going great and it opened up, you know, the receivers down the field or Cooper Kupp was Mr. Reliable in there. I don't know, but he's definitely been an up-and-down quarterback. And so what version of Goff are we going to get? That could also play a large part in whether the Rams are capable of taking a big lead or keeping up with the Patriots if the Rams interior defense doesn't really slow down the running game for the Pats.
Yes, indeed. Well, so three wide receiver sets. You'll be looking at that pretty much every single play for the Rams. 87% of their snaps this year, three wide receivers. Now, like you said, Cooper Kupp used to be included in that. Now, who is it? Reynolds, whatever his name is?
Josh Reynolds, yeah.
Yep, along with Woods and Cooks, who both, I mean, especially Woods, I mean, has really struggled over the last couple of weeks. Goff is... McVay has designed this offense, obviously going through Gurley, at least early, you know, for most of the season, but also so Goff can make throws off play action, make easy, simple throws. You know, he's going to have to make some tough throws, but apparently there was a stat about Mr. Goff. The hipster nerd stats say that he attempted the fifth fewest throws into tight windows, window thrower, for those that, of course, listen to Mr. Francesa, window thrower. Fifth fewest throws into tight windows, only 13% the entire year. And that's very definitely by design by McVay to limit the tough throws. Offensive line also was really, really good earlier in the season. It kind of struggled towards the latter part of the season. He was under pressure a lot more. And when he was under pressure, he was making mistakes. He was not playing as well. Well, duh, that's for any quarterback. Yes, it is. But Goff is a guy that needs a clean pocket. He needs a running game. But again, we did see him make some tough throws last week against the Saints. So maybe he has demonstrated that he can make, you know, if the play breaks down or if the running game is not going as well, that he can make a few tough throws if he needs to. But they are going to try and design the offense against the Patriots too. That will play to his strengths. And like I said, girly. The question with the Patriots on defense, at least against the Rams, what are they going to look to do with their secondary? Is it going to be Gilmore on Woods exclusively? They moved Gilmore over, like I said, to Kelsey last championship game. Probably you will see him on Woods, locked in on him, and they will use their speed guys on Cooks, and Cooks is the speed receiver. We'll see if there's any adjustments made by the master tactician, master of it at adjustments, Belichick, throughout the game. That'll be an interesting chess match between the boy wonder and the sagacious one in Bill Belichick. I'm actually more though intrigued about the matchup with the Rams D and the Rams D and the Patriots offense. Just again, we'll see if the Patriots can establish their running game like they have the last few weeks, that's what they're going to look to do. The Rams, again, were not good against the run throughout the whole regular season, but have been great against the run the last couple of weeks. And Aaron Donald is going to have to be the best player on the field for the Rams for them to win.
Right, considering we're repeating ourselves a little bit here with our preview, which is okay. I think it's a sign that we should come out with our prediction. So we'll do the line. The Rams are getting 2.5 points and the over under 56.5. I will let you go first. I already know what I'm predicting.
I'm not going to cop out. No cop out. If I'm going to pick whoever I'm picking to win. No backdoor covers. I get 2.5, so it's tough to do it anyway. But as much as I will be rooting for the Rams to win, I think I'm going to have to take the Pats laying to 2.5. I think you're going to see Goff force into a few mistakes. You might even see a play on special teams from now. Look, we know that McVay's not going to be gun shy here. If he senses something, if he thinks the game's getting out of hand, he's going to try something. We know that. But I think the Pats will be ready for it. Belichick is, again, he's Belichick. There's nothing that he'll be caught off guard, especially coming off his performance last year. I think even he acknowledged that he was out coached by 10 miles last year. And I think he is going, I think the brashness, the cockiness, at least that's the way I kind of perceive it a little bit with McVay, a little bit of the arrogance with him. I think that could potentially be his undoing. Now, look, if all their guys are making plays, you know, especially on offense, the Rams, if Gurley's doing his thing and Goff is playing well, it'll be a close game. But I would not be surprised to see the Patriots kind of get out on them a little bit early. And if they don't kind of, you know, stabilize the game there, the Rams, and I can see the Patriots kind of having a game where they end up winning by double digit points by the time we get to the final, maybe a 31-21 type of game, 34-20, 24, something like that. As much as I'm rooting for the Rams, I just don't see it. I just don't see them winning this game. I think it's going to be a tough chore for them. I'll take the over. I've already just made predictions, but I'll just take the over.
I'm going completely opposite to the lip.
34-20.
I'm going not anti-lip, but I'm just not going that way. I got a 31-24 Saints victory, which puts us at the under. I'm Saints victory. just to rub the salt in the wound. 31-24 Rams victory. I think, you know, as much as the Patriots did dominate, there were some opportunistic instances where the Chiefs did not capitalize and Brady should have been picked off. I think the Rams are going to find a way to force a couple of turnovers. Time and possession, Gurley is going to have a game and surprise folks. And let's face it, I'm a forever morbid AFC East Jets fan that just wants to see the Patriots lose. So there's that as well. So we'll see what happens. Yeah. So
indeed. Hey, look, the Rams could very easily win this game. That's why it's only 2.5. It's going to be entertaining. It's a better matchup than the Saints. I will say that the Saints were boring me. Like, I was like, the Saints just are not that great. They're just not that good. Whatever. It doesn't matter. They're out.
Yep.
There are more compelling players. There are better personalities with the Rams. The coach, obviously, some of the guys on defense, and Sue, I'm sure, will be an interesting character throughout the media day tomorrow. I can't wait.
Everybody will be too busy listening to this. Yes. Yeah, all right. So, but let's move off the football. We'll obviously recap the game next week.
The biggest superstar, the biggest star in this game, will not be on the field. The biggest star,
of course. Of course.
Yes, obviously, the immortal, amazing, incredible Gene Steratore. Yes, Gene Steratore, the guy in the referee, the former referee in the booth. That's going to go, oh, that was a kind of a good call. That was kind of a bad call there. I have to disagree. I think, no, not Gene. Gene does a fine job, but not Gene. No, of course, Tony Slomo, the former favorite of the hip. I think he was on his fantasy team at least like four times. Also his favorite in Madden.
Broke his collarbone 2 out of those 4 years, I believe.
Maybe perhaps that's why he didn't win those. I think he did win probably those years. Only have like 4 championships, at least 3. But yes, Tony Slomo, who's become an absolute bigger star in the booth than he ever was on the field, who apparently demonstrates his ability to read defenses better than as a player, who is going to dazzle and wow the audience with his prediction of Gurley's 3-yard run off tackle in the first quarter on second down. And, oh my God, he predicted that 3-yard run. Oh my God.
Well, my one reaction about the fascination about Romo is, you know, I don't understand why other color commentators have not been able to show that foresight, like a Phil Simms or a Troy Aikman. Those guys set the bar so high, you know, that despite all that, Tony Slomo has figured out a way to blow them away with his, you know, with his beautiful foresight on the football field.
Maybe he's just a football prophet. He just how about his former teammate though? We'll get to him. But I was actually going to save him. But it is amazing, like how he has turned into a bigger star in the booth than he was on the field with his predictions and his foresight. And they're going to get the ball to Gronk here. Oh my God, they threw the ball to Gronk. Who knew? He's just basically, he's looking at what they're doing on defense and saying, yeah, they'll probably throw the ball to Gronk here. There's only a few options.
I understand that it's like, yeah, I mean, some of it seems obvious, but I struggle to think of a color commentator that did it anyway.
That extent. No, I mean, you think about commentator. He's established that last year
Yeah, it's not anything new. Yeah, we knew that. And there was talk about it last year, but now now CBS has the games and they have the Super Bowl.
People might watch it for that. People might go, you know what? I don't care about the game. I just want to hear what Tony has. Every bar will have requests. If they're playing music while the game is on, I'm sure everybody will be like, hey, get this crap off. I want to hear Tony. Get Tony on. I don't want to listen to this nonsense.
You think they're going to want to listen to the radio crew?
Have a little pregame warm-up with a little H&L, everybody.
There you go.
The radio. Is that Boomer? I wonder if that's Boomer, I guess, on Westwood One. Maybe. One other thing about Tony, though, and I read this was interesting. Apparently, he warms up his vocals before every game, singing along to a few different choice artists, but apparently Lady Gaga is a favorite, along with U2 and Bruce. I wonder if he sings the Hip's former favorite song by U2. I wonder if the Hip can tell me what that former favorite song is, unless it still is his favorite.
Beautiful Day.
Of course, yes. He stands in there before, in the booth going, it's a good day. Or maybe he throws in a little bit of like Sound of Music.
Take me to that other place. Reach me. I could just see him like touching himself when he says touch me. Closing his eyes, doing a little gold dust. Touch me.
He does that with Jim. Jim, touch me. Maybe he has his own like basketball moment. You think you're excited? Feel these nipples. Bob and
God. All right. So let's talk a bit about we did last week, but the segment got completely cut off, so we have to do it again. We are going to discuss the three professional sports that are currently ongoing and not in the off season, which New York team is doing the best. And that is, of course, none other than the New York Islanders, who are first place in the Metropolitan Division at 63 points with a 3-point lead in their division. And it was a nice little touch to see Barzal score some goals in the NHL All-Star game and his Metropolitan Division team taking home. Is it a trophy? I don't even know. The All-Star game on Saturday night. And so, Lip, give us a you try to repeat exactly what you said last show that was cut off about, you know, the your take on the Islanders this season to date. You have 2 minutes.
Actually, so you said if it was a trophy. No, actually, it was a car, a brand new car that they had Jason Witten give to the victor. And he then drove it into the Zamboni after they gave the keys to Jason.
Crafted?
Well, like I said, we'll get to the Jason again. I keep bringing it up because it's so funny. But yes, I thought the best team in New York. I thought you were going to say the best team in all of New York, not just the metropolitan area, but all of New York. How about those Buffalo Bills? Oh, we'll get to them, of course, obviously. But yes, the New York Islanders are in first place at the All-Star break and have more points than a team up north that features a former New York Islander who I have not gotten a chance to relay to the audience my thoughts and feelings about one Mr. Not Matt Martin, who's now a New York Islander, who was a former Toronto Maple Leaf. No, but of course, John Tavares. As he and his bed sheets made the trip as well to San Jose, and who was also booed by the San Jose crowd as he had a little flirtatious thing with them leading up to his decision to sign with the Maple Leafs. But the Islanders, we can break down every single game, and maybe do we have time? You said you wanted to keep this under now, so do we have time to break down every game that we've
ready in 2 minutes? So you said the Islanders, look, I just wanted to make it clear for the record, you said the Islanders have more points than the Maple Leafs. They have one more point.
But hey, come on, the Maple Leafs were worth how many people's choice?
Come on.
Eastern Conference representative in the Stanley Cup final. Come on. And Matt Barzal, like you said, has demonstrated that he is ready to take the mantle from Tavares and be the next face of the franchise. You know, Andrews Lee was named captain in the offseason, and he has been a fantastic captain. But, of course, the question with Andrews Lee, is he going to be re-signed before the deadline? Right now,
You think Barzal has a higher ceiling than Tavares?
He will be a better player than Tavares. Right? Yes.
I agree. Yeah.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. He will be a better player than John Tavares. I'm not going to say right now, he's better. Tavares is having a very good season. Where was this? Where was 30 goals before the All-Star break ever with the Islanders? What was he saving it for when he left that son of a bitch? But we will have our chance to get our revenge and voice exactly how we feel to Mr. Tavares when he makes his return to NYCB Live or Nassau Coliseum, whatever you call it. The 28th day of February, so we are actually 1 month out from Tavares making his return to New York and his return to the Coliseum. So the 13,000 and change at the Coliseum can greet him and express exactly what we think of his decision to leave and lead the Islanders in the lurch. But hey, we have Barry Trotz, we have Robin Leonard, we have the amazing Devontaes. For all of you Islander fanatics out there, or you casual hockey fans that are saying, who in the hell is you mean Jonathan Toews? Isn't he on the Blackhawks? No, the soon-to-be better Toews that's on the Islanders, who was recently called up and has established himself in the Islanders lineup. Unbelievable.
Has T-O-E-W-S now?
T-O-W-E-S.
T-O-W-E-S.
Okay. Yep. Same spelling
as Charlie. How it sounds. Just not how, I mean, just not how it reads. Yeah. Doesn't sound how it reads.
Anyway. You know, it reads like T-A-Y, I don't know, something. But no, he is not related to Jonathan, but he will be the better Toews before you blink. But it's really remarkable what this team has been able to do. Barry Trotz has taken this team from being the worst defensive team in the league by 100 miles last year. And right now they are if you go based off of goals allowed, they are right now the best defensive team in the league, as they are first in goals against. Their team save percentage is like 921 or 922, something like that. Just insane. Leonard's been off the charts. Grice started off as the number one, and Leonard has kind of wrestled away from him. But Grice has also played very well this year. Again, you could just see the difference in coaching and what a difference a great coach makes. You just hear him talk. I mean, he's just – Barry Trotz is worth his weight in gold. Lou bringing him over this year, that was by far his best acquisition. I know Uncle Leo, everybody loves Uncle Leo. Hello, Jerry, Uncle Leo, hello. Uncle Leo apparently is a jokester in the locker room. That's why they love him so much in there. And despite his four-year contract and the fact that he might be the worst player in the NHL, apparently they love him in that locker room. But it doesn't matter. The bottom line is this team is just playing some amazing defensive hockey. They have been opportunistic. They have they've gotten better as the season has gone along. Look, they've been a little bit inconsistent offensively at times. They're going to need more than just Barzal. Some of the other guys have picked it up. Lee has picked it up a lot. Nelson has had a very good year, but they've had other guys that have been inconsistent, guys like Bailey, who has been – we praise Josh Bailey for the leaps and bounds improvements from years past, but it's kind of reverted back to some old Bailey tendencies, which you'd like to see Barry get him out of. But the question right now for this Islander team and the Islander fan base is, what the hell is Lou going to do come the trade deadline? They have three unrestricted free agents, Lee, that we talked about, Nelson, and Jordan Eberle, all unrestricted. What do they do with those guys? Do they roll the dice if none of them are signed? Do they look to maybe trade one of them or maybe two of them? Look, Lee's not going to go anywhere. I think there's a 99% chance he'll be signed before the deadline. That's my prediction. It might be wrong, but there's no way he's going anywhere. He's not going anywhere. Nelson, I don't think is going to go anywhere, because I think Trotz likes him a lot and he's shown market improvement. I think Eberle would be the guy to go. But again, do they then look to replace him with another established player? There have been names floated out there. You've heard Tarasenko on St. Louis, one of the best snipers in the game. You've heard his name. Obviously, the unrestricted free agents like Stone and Duchesne in Ottawa, and you'll hear what does St. Louis do? You've heard Petrangelo's name, and you've heard the Kings and Muzzin and maybe even Kovalchuk. And, you're hearing teams and names and all over the place, swirling rumors. Well, we'll be able to condense it all over the next few weeks. Lou is not Gartz, though. He is not going to go, I don't think I can really make it. We're not ready yet. I think it's too steep a price. I'm so much of a wimp. I can't trade anybody. So it's not going to be any of that. If Lou senses something, if he feels it's the right deal, he'll do it. That's why that's one of the things that makes Lou the great GM, despite what you might think about his signing of Uncle Leo and Philip Blah and whatever. I know it went over 2 minutes, Mr. Hip. What do you have to say? Just a remarkable.
I think for those that aren't paying attention that closely to the Islanders, I think their brains are swirling from that information splurge.
Yes, well, it's always a splurge when it comes
to the Islanders. Shot on the face. The Islander shot on the face. You're just going to have to lick it up. So the Islanders actually have a long break. They don't resume play until Friday, even though NHL play resumes today, Monday, where this is Monday night broadcast. In any event, they resume hosting the conference leading Lightning. Last time they squared off, the Islanders scored 3 goals in about 5 minutes and hung on. So now they get to play at the Coliseum.
Yeah, NYCB Live. Yes, get ready.
Oh, okay, it's Friday night action. All right, let's. So, I want to just kind of follow up on the Michigan basketball discussion. So, one thing I did say, not verbatim, but paraphrasing, if you know, Duke had just lost to Syracuse, and they were number one, and Michigan was number two, and Michigan was undefeated, and I said, if Michigan takes care of business against Wisconsin this weekend, then Michigan will emerge as the number one team. Whoopsie! Michigan loses by 10 at Wisconsin. Then Michigan follows up with a close win against Minnesota. Then they played Friday night and basically dominated Indiana in Indiana. They were up 17-0 to start the game. So they look back on track and they resume play tomorrow night, which 9 o'clock start after our career crafters. Yes. And it is at home against Ohio State, which is a team that's not ranked. So they are relatively competitive, Ohio State. The Big Ten is a relatively competitive conference. Michigan gets 10 points. We'll see how they respond. But as I said last show, I want them to lose a couple of games. They were undefeated to kind of take the pressure off a bit. So they've gotten the loss. Now they're number five. I'm good with that. Let them face some adversity. Let them build some strength off the bench. And they will be a team, and they're not even, some experts aren't even putting them in, you know, one of the top four seeds, and they are ranked fifth. And so I like that. So that I don't want everybody on Michigan come tourney time. Well, there's still a lot of basketball to be played. So speaking of basketball to be played, you got a team in the northern region of New York State.
Yes.
That everybody cares to hear about.
You mean the Canisius Tigers? Well, right next door to the Buffalo Bulls. Oh, the Buffalo Bulls. Yes, obviously. Ranked number 14 in the country right now. Yes, the team that knocked off the Arizona Wildcats in the tournament last year.
Well, the AP poll says they're 18, just to...
Okay. I know that they fluctuated 18, 16, 14. They have two losses now, I believe. Yes, but... as a Buffalo alum, as a guy that never, ever, ever, ever followed any Buffalo sports, because why? And of course, I'm not just talking about the Sabres or the Bills either, since unless you're in Western New York, you're not following those teams, since they both stink for forever. I know the Sabres better this year, but yes, the Buffalo Bulls are on the national stage, especially after beating Arizona last year, and they brought back most of their players, and the Massenburg guy and a Perkins guy who's really good. Massenburg is their big star, but that Perkins guy is also really good. A very deep team, senior-laden team, and a team to be reckoned with. So if you're going to store this little nugget of information away, make sure you put it away right now. And remember the Buffalo Bulls when you're filling out your brackets in March. Yes.
The teams that have to square up against this this imposing squad, Ball State, Bowling Green, Central Michigan, Akron, Toledo, Ohio. Those are two different institutions. Kent State, Akron, Miami of Ohio, Ohio, two different institutions there as well. And finally, Bowling Green.
Oh, so you're saying that the Buffalo schedule is significantly more daunting than the Michigan schedule? Is that the point you're trying to convey with your reading up?
We'll have a very strong read on the Buffalo's ability to make a deep run in the tournament based on their strength of schedule. Yeah.
Yes. Well, they beat Syracuse in the Carrier Dome. They did do that. And they beat West Virginia when they were supposed to be good early in the season. Just don't tell anybody West Virginia stinks now. And hopefully if they don't win their conference, I mean, they'll be an at-large. They'd have to fall off a cliff at this point for them not to be an at-large, but even if they don't win their conference. But
they did win at Syracuse, so that's a big win.
It is. That's really their only big win. West Virginia doesn't even mean anything anymore. I think, doesn't West Virginia stink now? I think they're having a pretty bad year. But, store this away, everybody, for your bracket filling out in March, Buffalo Bulls.
All right, so transition to the hipster moment of Zenith. What do you got?
I was going to just do one, but I had to put and we will do another segment that I will introduce on my own, too. But we will do the hipster moment of Zenith first. We're going to do two. We will go through them. The first one I'll go through quickly. So, Jay, we talked about Tony Romo, the superstars, the big, big shot color commentator for CBS. Well, Jason Witten, his former teammate and the guy that he caught almost all of his passes from throughout his career, Jason Witten, went to the booth this year, as for those that may not know. and was the Monday Night Football color commentator, along with Booger and his contraption and the other guy, Joe something, I don't know. But Jason, was not exactly a sensation in the booth like Tony was, since instead of predicting plays accurately, his analysis was, so my first half read is that the Saints did a good job with the running of the ball. They need to do a little bit better of the job with the stopping of the run. And I think that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have to do a little better job with the passing of the ball. And maybe if they do a little bit not so bad of a job of the stopping of the run, they will maybe have a chance to win the game. Oh, scintillating there, Jason. So Jason was the color commentator for the Pro Bowl. We didn't even mention the Pro Bowl, the NFL All-Star game.
How dare we forget to mention that?
Yes, or the ballot, it's really like the what they call the nickname for football, the gridiron ballerina, the ballet, whatever. So it really is like a ballet competition out there. I shouldn't say that. But anyway, so Jason Witten was the color commentator for the Pro Bowl. And apparently, when Patrick Mahomes was completing a pass to Eric Ebron, Jason Witten thought it was good analysis to point out he has been his go-to guy all year. Eric Ebron catching balls from Patrick Mahomes all year, his go-to guy all year. And you saw it there again, to which I guess Joe, whatever his name is, had to point out to him, Jason, they're not on the same team. Eric Ebron is on the Colts and Mahomes is on the my bad. So just another continuation of his rough year. And then just for the icing on the cake for Jason Witten's inaugural season as an NFL color commentator, he was presenting some stupid trophy to Mahomes, and it literally fell apart in his hands as he was giving it to him. He went to get it, just like snapped in half and like fell to the ground. Here you go, Patrick. Whoops.
You know how these former player hires turn out when you throw them, into the booth. You just don't know.
Yeah, exactly. See how long we left. Tony, who's now a sensation, and Jason Witten, who might be the worst color commentator ever. I mean, bring back Dan Dierdorf. Where's Dan Dierdorf? Bring him back.
Dan Dierdorf.
Yeah. U of M, go blue. Where's Dan Dierdorf?
Didn't he commentate with Dick Enberg? Usually they had good chemistry. The late Dick Enberg, that is.
Yes, yes, indeed. Well, actually, Dan used to be on Monday Night Football with Al Michaels and Frank was with them. I mean, there was different combinations back in the day. I mean, remember the ill-fated Dennis Miller experiment, and it was Boomer was in there, and so many different characters. Obviously, it was Al and John for a little while, too.
What about Frank Caliendo, by the way, right?
Oh, obviously, of course, yes. No, Kathy Lee's husband, of course. The late, actually, I think the late Frank Gifford, I think. Pretty sure. Anyway, so yes, a rough debut. We'll see how long he lasts there, Jason Witten, but that was my first HMOZ. The other HMOZ, I will get a little sports snippet in there, but it's not sports related, but it was so good a story. I had to share it. So everybody knows about the government shutdown and yada yada. So, and how Donald wanted his wall. Well, so an Arizona lawmaker, Arizona State Senator Gail Griffin, the Republican, obviously, introduced a bill that would force computer and phone retailers to install porn blocking software, which could only be removed for a tidy fee of at least $20. Now, this money would apparently, the intent was for it to go and fund the border wall. So apparently Arizona thinks that they just have so many porn watchers on their hands that they can collect enough money to fund a border wall.
I would like to be a staffer for the lawmaker and have to present a study that I conducted that supports how much money that they project to make from that fee or tax, whatever you want to call it. Like, so we surveyed a sample, random sampling of, at the local gentleman's club, Bombay Sapphire. Yes. Sapphire Lounge, and so we asked each one of them, how much would you pay? Like, to compile. you have to come up with a budget estimate of how much you're going to raise from.
You would, yeah. I mean, $5.7 billion was what the Donald kept saying. I need $5.7 billion. So, I mean,
so was it $20 per day access, or once you pay the $20, you're good? Is it per device?
My guess is it's I think it's per device. I think it was per device. If you're going to remove,
so a one-time removal fee for $20.
I believe so. Yes, it gets even better though because it outlines what the software should do. So it was going to block all access to any website that would facilitate prostitution and revenge porn. So not just porn. So
prostitution and revenge porn. That's it.
Well, everything, but it also specified specified prostitution. So I guess any prostitution, I don't know. It said all porn, but then I guess it wanted to specify prostitution, revenge porn. But then it went on to helpfully define pornography, so anything that they would define as pornography that would not be permitted. So that would include any, and we have a family show here. I know we try not to be obscene. So, you know, if you have small kids around, just, you know, cover your ears. If there's maybe a person with a little hipster or a baby hipster, just cover their ears. So that includes any female breasts below a point immediately above the top of the areola, as well as male genitals in a discernibly turgid state, whether covered or uncovered. It's the definition. It's set for pornography.
So imagine, you would have loved to have had the opportunity to do this. You'd like to volunteer your services as a consultant to help define all the permutations that could fall within the definition.
I think
we know you've seen your fair share of a variety of videos, and so you could probably weigh in and help expand the what it captures.
Right immediately above the top of the air. Well, think about it then. That means Victoria's Secret, and you know, they can't even like advertise that. That would be defined as pornography, or like any like underwear ads or anything. Like, it's all pornography. And nope, not allowed. $20 fee if you want to shop for lingerie, ladies. In a discernibly turgid state.
I've never heard that word used in that context. Have you? I've never heard that word in that context. They're like, what word can we think of that has never been used to describe a male body, a certain male body part, ever? And yet you still know exactly what we're referring to. How smart do we make ourselves sound?
I might have been in a turgid state as soon as I read that article.
So I am ready for Hipster Beer of the Week. Are you?
Yes. Well, I wanted to introduce just one more news segment, and you can sign off, I guess, after this. So
okay.
Mike Francesa, of course, is back. I don't know. I guess we didn't get this in last week. We were cut off. So he's back. You know, oh my God, he retired. He's back. He's out on the Twitters. And
At Hip in the Lip if you want to see some of the more thoughtful responses on Twitter to Mike Francesa's tweet. The Lip is really on a streak right now. really adding some color to the conversation. So.
And I also will every now and again retweet one of his best Twitters. So I just wanted, so we'll do maybe like a Twitter of the day, a Twitter of the week, however we want to do it. I'll let the Hip sign off on it. I just wanted to get this in though. So it's been a while. We didn't get a chance to do this last week. So on December 28th, Mike Frant, write this down. Make a mental note. December 28th, Mike Francesa sent out this Twitter. The Golden State era, of course, the Golden State Warriors. The Golden State era is over, proclaimed Mike Francesa on December 28th. So when they win their next championship with their eyes closed, we can revert back and maybe remind the big guy that he might have been a little premature. Maybe he was in a turgid state when he thought of that Twitter. So... There we go. The Mike Francesa Twitter of the day. All right. We'll move on now to our final segment. Everybody's favorite, yours and mine, after a very long hiatus. And what do you have for us, Mr. Hip, on the Hipster Beer of the Week?
Okay, so I declared, and again, we had episode of the week last week. It got cut off, so we're redoing it here. But the premise behind the hipster beer of the week, at least we're going to try going forward, is to find good shelf beer. Yeah, we'll do the occasional can release beer or whatever. But you know what? I don't, in the grand scheme of things, I don't think people really care that much about, you know, a single can off release. Maybe if we highlight the brewery, but you know, beer that is, you know, you don't have to wait online hours to get, that's still pretty good, that you could potentially buy in the store. So the beer that I proposed to share last week, and we'll do it here, is Industrial Arts Brewing, and the name of the beer is Wrench. It is, I think, 6.8. It's a New England IPA, self-described. After you drink this, you'll be a certified juice wolf. This one is seriously over the top, forever hazy, with intense peachy and citrus notes that will wash over you like a waterfall of flavor. So here's the thing. You can find it on shelves in New York City metropolitan area, probably beyond. I just don't know personally. Let us know. But here's the thing. So literally that night, the same night that we recorded that show, somebody sent me a link, not didn't listen, you know, obviously couldn't hear it because we didn't record the portion, of the beermenus.com top 50 beers of the year. And so I'm like, all right, this will be interesting. I'm going to see how many of these I actually drank. And so it starts at 50, and I'm just going, and I'm going, you know, and it's like, oh, yeah, I had this one, I had that one. And I get, I'm like, all right, well, what's going to be one? Not thinking. What was the number one beer of the year on the list? Sure enough, Industrial Arts Brewing Company Wrench.
Number one?
This number one beer of the year on this Beer Menu's Top 50s Beer of the Year article.
Wow. Number one.
Number one. Not complete coincidence. I'm not saying it was necessarily the number one beer of the year, but the best shelf beer that I, you know, that's an IPA style. Every time I see a four pack, I pretty much grab one because I know that I drink it out of the can. I don't need to put it in a glass. I don't care. I'll just drink it straight out of the can. If I want to just, you know, have one, you know, IPA that's not too strong to, you know, wind down an evening and relax, I'm happy to have it. It's just great beer to have around. So hipster beer of the week, Wrench, keep it up, Industrial Arts.
Wow. Well, all right. So how many out of the list, what number did you hit? Were you in the 40s?
Yeah, right.
Actually, you know what? I don't recognize 37. Like,
37 out of 50. No, I probably had about 7 or 8 of these.
That's it. You've checked in like 1500 now. You're like the right
1400 check-ins in like 1 year. Of unique beers, yes. 1400.
Okay, unique.
All right. Well, I think we're all turgid after this lengthy episode. So thanks for sticking around. You can like us on iTunes, the podcast app. We're on Stitcher. If you want to listen to us to some other medium and you can't find us, just let us know. But until next time, we'll talk about some Super Bowl and whatever else.
Yes, recapping. All right, next.
Slip up the slow-mo.
Right now. Turgid.